show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life, you hear me? Give my creation life.
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Get counted down.
6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast.
Your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you've read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. How are you doing today? Hope you're having a good afternoon. I certainly am. A beautiful day here in Southwest Florida, and I hope it's nice where you are as well. We're having a little bit of a cool snap here, about 74 degrees today, and a little bit chilly at night, so very nice. Nice to have a change in the weather. And I'm somewhat preoccupied here. I'm in the studio, and it's filled with presents I'm opening here. It's my birthday today. Yes, it is. October 25th, my birthday. And so I'm just opening up all the gifts that I got from all the listeners. There's several hundred of them in here, evidently. Oh, that's moving boxes from when we moved into this. All right, never mind. Hey, glad to have all of you along with us this afternoon. We've got a good show in store for you. We're going to have Celeste Zapala with us just a little bit later. She is a member of the Gold Star Families Speak Out, and she's going to talk about the loss of her son in Iraq. And we'll have a good conversation with her. She's going to come up at the top of the next hour, right after the news. We'll have her on, a nice lady and interesting story to tell about losing her son in Iraq, a tragedy. That's every single one of those kids dying over there is a tragedy. And it gets you down when you think about it, but we've got to think about getting this thing over with today. Did you see the news conference today? I guess we're going to have a news conference every day now, right? He's going to just pour the BS at us every single day and hoping to scoop up another vote or two for his people, hoping to stay in power. You know, I think he really is concerned. He's saying, no, they're going to... On the one hand, and the more I think about it, in that press conference of his today, did you notice how cocksure he is? He seems to be, now we're going to keep the House and the Senate. Does he know something we don't? Does he? Oh, God, does he? I don't know. I'm afraid. I really am. Many of these elections, the House races in particular, are very close. The Senate races are very close. And a little tweak here, a little tweak there in a black box voting machine, and you could turn several of these elections around and keep the House, keep the Senate, and maybe that's what he knows that we don't know. Do you suppose? Oh, Lord, I hope not. You know, he sounds like he did that night... in Florida, not so awfully long ago, when they called the election for Al Gore, and he seemed so assured when they put the camera on him in the and wherever it was that he was staying with his dad and Babs, his mom, and so forth. They didn't seem worried at all. It turns out they weren't worried. They did know something we didn't know. And they may well this time. And I'll, boy, that's what's got me worried above anything else, is if this is going to be an honest election. And isn't it awful? Here we are in what used to be the greatest, most free nation on earth and all, and we're worrying about an election being fixed. He seems awfully sure. He really does. I don't know. And in today, did very many of you get to see his press conference? Or show of hands here, I'm counting. Hey, and by the way, you can give us a call, 866-546-5254. That's 866-546-5254. And Timber on the chat room, on the Head On Radio Network chat room, says, Guy, don't you know the 2004 election was totally legit? John Kerry said so himself. Well, yeah, John, he gave up a little early. Often wondered what happened there. Often wondered. I would have fought tooth and nail for that. But we're going to talk about Mr. Ken Blackwell in Ohio a little bit later. Right now, I just wonder about today's press conference, and I'm sure many of you saw it. If you could stand it, if you could, it is hard. I understand, with all of his monkey-like gestures and these little smirks and so forth. And he says we're not leaving until the job is done. And I hope you can help me understand this a little better, because after I watched that press conference, I'm not sure I did. Bush says we're not leaving until the job is done. And the job is what they call creating a unified and stable Iraq. That means, in my mind, we're never leaving. And he refused to answer the question about a permanent base in Iraq. And that, too, to me, that also means to me that we're staying forever, have no plans to ever leave. And we're not giving the Iraqis a timetable. He says we're establishing benchmarks. We're letting the Iraqis know that they have to live up to their bargain, or will what? Will we leave? He's going to give them benchmarks, and if they don't meet them, so what then? We'll leave? Is that it? I thought he said we're staying until the job is done. But he's telling the Iraqis they have to live up to benchmarks, or what? We'll leave? But he just said, we'll stay until the job is done. I really don't understand. Do you? Does anyone understand the double talk he spewed today? And more troops? As I understand it, the decision as to whether or not we're sending more troops won't be made until after the election. They've pointedly said that. Is this because they don't want it to look political? And that begs the question, political for whom? They know damn well that if they announce the decision to send in more troops, that it will absolutely kill any chances they have of keeping the House or the Senate. How nice. They'll just keep the voting public in the dark about the most important issue in the election until after they voted. Do the Republican voters understand what's going on here? And Junior said it's important for Iraq to become our partner in the war, this war on terror. Who the hell is he kidding? If the present government, the Shiites, if they stay in power in Iraq, the only partner they want to have is Iran. The Shiites are in cahoots with Iran. Unless we stay, which Bush says we're not staying after the job is done. So if we leave, we won't have Iraq as a partner, and if we don't leave, we'll continue to be in the middle of a civil war and have our military personnel killed on a regular basis until we finally run out of soldiers to sacrifice for George Bush's good name. I could be wrong, but it sounds like a heads we lose, tails we lose situation to me. It sounds to me like the only winners in this whole deal are the likes of the Halliburtons and the KBRs and so forth. Can you tell me anybody else who's won in this situation besides them? The United States of America so far in this conflict is most certainly a loser. The Iraqi public most certainly are big losers. Who's won in this situation? Has anybody won anything in this situation? The United States arms suppliers and United States corporations who have their fingers in the pie over there and had their fingers in the pie and planned on having their fingers in the pie all along. Before this thing ever started, they were rounded up and ready and drooling and ready to go. And they're there. And they're making a fortune. Somewhere I had a little... I don't know where I had this. I had a note here somewhere about odds and ends, about the money that Halliburton and those folks are making over there. Can't seem to locate it right now. But, yeah, they are. They're making a fortune. And they're making off of the backs of our dead soldiers and the dead Iraqi civilians. And I've received several emails from some of you folks, and I've read several reports about something that's very disturbing, and I don't know if we're getting the truth. I have no idea. How many of you are familiar with a news organization called TBR News.org? Is there any credibility there? I don't know. I was just shown that website today, I think, for the first time, TBRnews.org. They're claiming that perhaps 300 people were killed in that Falcon base attack, that the casualty list is actually that high. Is it true? Do we know? If that is the truth, was it suppressed for political reasons? Because the Bush administration has every reason right now to suppress any bad news coming out of Iraq, don't they? They certainly do. I am so confused by this whole thing now, and I was hoping some of you could help straighten me out. You know, don't anyone be confused by the White House statements this week. Just because they're now saying they never said stay the course doesn't mean they aren't going to stay the course. It's just that they're not going to say that they're staying the course anymore. It's not cutting or running or anything like that. They just want the public to know that they're going to win the Bush war in Iraq, and they're going to win it by doing the same things they have been doing all along. It's just that even though they're staying the course, they want us to know that they never were staying the course, but we are staying the course. Clear? Have you got it? It's clear as mud, right? Man, have they taken people around in circles on this deal. And, of course, we've got a soldier who's been kidnapped over there. Now, why do they say that? Why do they put it in those terms? Why hasn't he been captured instead of kidnapped? Does it sound better? And one thing I've been wondering about a captured prisoner of ours, or one of our people, based on the standards that we've established for the treatment of prisoners, we can expect him to be treated well, right? I mean, no waterboarding or anything like that, right? It's interesting. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. I do hope you'll give us a call. Much to talk about this afternoon. If Harold Ford's numbers go down and he loses the Senate race, and I've done a lot of thinking about this over the last night. I've watched that ad over and over and over again because I watched some totally, obviously, people devoid of any ethics and morals whatsoever, some Republican talking heads, say that they thought that ad was just fine, the one in Tennessee that we're talking about, the race-baiting ad. If Harold Ford's numbers go down and he loses that Senate race, we will know once and for all that the South really has risen again. And many, certainly not all, But many of the residents of that area are every bit as racist as were their forefathers. And don't get me wrong here. There are many, many good people in the South who are not racist. But the dirty little secret, if Ford loses that race after having a lead a while back and losing it maybe on account of this ad, the dirty little secret will not be so secret anymore. Just as it isn't a secret anymore that the Republican Party is racist to its core. We've seen some dirty politics over the years from them. The Willie Horton ads. The Swift Vote for Truth ads. The despicable ads against Max Cleland by Saxby Chambliss. The ads in South Carolina against one of their own and one John McCain. The horrible ads the America's PAC is running in black communities right now. The ads running in Ohio claiming that Ted Strickland is gay. The one in Ohio claiming that Sherrod Brown didn't pay his taxes for 13 years. All of them are despicable lies and prevarications, but this one against Harold Ford, to my mind, tops them all. It's race baiting at its finest. You know it, I know it, and they know it. And we're going to see whether or not the people of Tennessee are intelligent enough or colorblind enough to see this ad for what it is, and that it really is an attempt to appeal to the very base instincts of those racists who reside in the state of Tennessee. That's who that ad was for. They might as well put a notation right on it. Hey, all you racist, all you folks who hate black people, pay attention to this ad. Now, I love the state of Tennessee. I've been there many, many times. I got lots of friends down in the Lake City area, and we used to go down the Norris Dam and have a good time there. Beautiful place, beautiful place. I love the whole state of Tennessee. It's a wonderfully diverse area geographically. Actually, three different areas. And Nashville is one of the most fun places in America to visit, I think. And Memphis has a whole lot to offer as well. And Chattanooga is an interesting place, too. Come to think of it, I'd forgotten about this. Chattanooga is where I first saw blatant, open, in-your-face racism. When I was a little kid, we'd go to Florida once a year. We lived in Ohio, and we'd go to Florida once a year to visit my grandpa, who had moved from Ohio to retire, and he moved down to the Kissimmee, Florida area. And we always drove through Chattanooga and stopped at Lookout Mountain. And the first time we went there, I went to get a drink from a water fountain and saw that there were two fountains, both with signs, white and black. And then I saw the restrooms were labeled white and black as well. And I so clearly remember asking my dad why those signs were there. And I could tell he was very uncomfortable explaining it to me. But I got the message. And somehow at 9 years old, it made me feel dirty. I couldn't fathom how another human being could separate himself from others because of skin color. I really couldn't understand how one race could come to feel superior to another. That isn't what I'd been taught by my mom and dad. That isn't what I'd been taught by my Sunday school teacher or anybody else I knew. It was a mystery to me, and it still is. But moreover, feeling that way and not overtly acting on it is one thing. But taking action on those feelings is quite another. And that's exactly what's happening in Tennessee right now. It's dirty, ugly politics in its worst form. And if I were a Republican, I would make it known within my party that I would no longer support a party that would ever initiate such actions as that ad. I could no longer have my name associated with any organization that's openly racist and mean-spirited as the modern-day Republican Party. I would not do it, and I swear to God, if the Democrats run an ad like that, I'd be calling the DNC and telling them to cancel my membership, that they'd never get a dime, another dime from me, and I would never support the party again if I ever saw that from my party. Never! What is wrong with people? First of all, how could you be so filthy, rotten, underhanded to run an ad like that. His opponent says, oh, I didn't approve of it. Well, he did approve of it, and it was still running as of last night. It's the same thing Blackwell's doing in Ohio with the ads that run against Dickens. Oh, I didn't approve it. It's got him right on there saying, I approve this ad. He tries to have it both ways. He tries to have his cake and eat it too. Blackwell and this guy in Tennessee. Oh, I don't approve of that ad, but you know, I approve of it. I do really approve of it, and I'm getting the benefits from it. My God, I hope the Democratic Party never does anything like that. The reprehensible ads being run in Ohio, Tennessee, and other places is way beyond the pale of decency. And the paradox in this whole thing is, in Ohio, we have a black man, Ken Blackwell, running ads that claim his opponent is gay. Ken Blackwell doesn't even have the support of his own party. He's solicited the help and the financial assistance from the fundamentalist Christian base in Ohio. This is a group who claims to be decent and honorable and bound to obey the Ten Commandments. And I swear the last time I looked at the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not bear false witness is one of the commandments they seem to have forgotten. Because Blackwell is running ads that are outright damnable lies, and they still support him. Surely, they're not stupid enough to not see what Blackwell's doing here. I was born and raised in a small farm area in Ohio, and I'm so grateful for the loving environment that was my community. But Ohio has turned into a political cesspool that these past few years, and much of it's been because of Ken Blackwell. But I do believe the signs are good that Ohio is awakened to the filth and the vile corruption that is the Republican Party. And they're going to throw Mike DeWine and Ken Blackwell right out into the street. And Tennessee, we shall see. Tennessee is the home of many wonderful, decent folks. And one can only hope that the good can overcome the evil that's taking place there right now. If it doesn't, I'll never be able to look at that beautiful place in the same way again, for I'll know that if a majority of Tennesseans have agreed with the downright evil ads that the Republican Party are running right now, then Tennessee just won't look the same in my eyes again. I hope to God people see this for what it is. How many of you are old enough to remember blatant racism? How many? You have to be a little bit longer in the tooth than your 20s or 30-something to have seen it. I remember one time we were headed south and my father took a different route and we ended up down through Birmingham, Alabama, and they were having, well, they had the National Guard called out. And we were prisoners in our hotel room at night because we weren't allowed to go out because the National Guard wouldn't let you out, and it was all because of race riots. And they had the National Guards, and those were the days of the Bull Connor and the dogs and the clubs and the tear gas. They were awful times. And it's always been heartening to me over the years to see the change come little by little by little. That maybe we're finally just getting away from that. Maybe America's waking up. Maybe the South is finally coming up and saying, you know, we're ashamed of this. And most of us don't want to see it anymore. But that ad they're running now is so reprehensible and so vile. And then the nerve of the Republican talking heads last night to go on the air and defend it. No, it's just politics. It's just humor. I don't know about you, but I didn't find anything funny about it. I found no humor in it whatsoever. girl who's, I guess, supposedly naked at the end that says, "Call me, Harold." We all know what that was all about. We most certainly do. It was race baiting in its purest form. And I hope they suffer for it. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. Give us a call. We're going to pause for a short break right now.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Ladies and gentlemen, Rush Limbaugh!
They say that I'm sleaze and elitist. You please, everybody disagrees with my rap.
It's rap.
I'm horrendous. I'm appalling. My ratings now are falling because I'm so full of bull, so full of crap.
Full of crap.
With condescending cries, making money, selling lies. You might say, everybody hates my guts.
Hates his guts.
I'm offensive, I'm a bigot, I'm a fraud. Can you dig it? I'm a sexist, racist, homophobic, fat, pathetic putz.
I'm a Nazi.
He's a Nazi.
That's right.
I really am,
because I'm a Nazi.
He's a Nazi.
That's right.
You're being scammed.
I'm a Nazi.
He's a Nazi.
I don't care about the middle class, because I'm a fat conservative butthead with a face of a horse's ass.
He's a fat conservative butthead.
Hey,
with the face of
horses. I have a subhuman figure, a huge rear end. My brain? That's another story.
It's quite another
I
story.
I have a face the size of a wash tub, and my ass is as big as Missouri. Yes!
This bastard is sick. He's a fat mob as big, and his ass is as big as Missouri.
Yes, Terry Bob! Manipulating statements exaggerate the truth. I can't believe the hate my show inspires. It's not just because I'm stupid. It's not just because I'm scum. It's just because Republicans are liars. I am heartless. I am vain, insensitive, insane. They say that I'm a national disgrace. I am nasty, insulting, basically revolting. I'm a concentrated pile of human waste. Because I'm a Nazi.
He's a Nazi.
Hi, I really am, because I'm a Nazi.
He's a Nazi.
That's right. You're being scammed.
I'm a Nazi.
He's a Nazi. I don't care about the middle classes. I'm a sick Republican sleazeball with the face of a horse's ass.
He's a sick Republican sleazeball with the face of a horse's ass.
They say that this is not about my vanity. They doubt my sanity. They think I'm nuts.
So nuts.
I am a cyst on the ass of humanity.
Ew.
New Republican slogan. Read my putz. From the bowels of Eve comes the voice of Rush Limbaugh. In closing, let me say that each and every day, I'm an evil, rotten, egotistical snob.
Evil, rotten.
I'm the capo, the capo, Joe McCarthy-like Gestapo, the right-wing, foam-at-the-mouth, jack-booted slob, the democratic trashing, years of liberal bashing with the equivalent compassion of a grommet. With the IQ of a fig, I'm the fat, obnoxious pig. And the truth of the matter is, I'm vomit. Because I'm a Nazi.
He's a Nazi.
Hi, I really am, because I'm a Nazi.
He's a Nazi.
Hi, you're being scammed.
I'm a Nazi.
He's a Nazi. I don't care about the middle class, because I'm a fear-mongering scumbag with the face of a horse's ass.
He's a fat conservative
buckhead. Hey, sick Republican sleazeball. Fear-mongering scumbag.
Oh.
Egotistical ass white.
Yes.
Mean-spirited, hog-wallering fat conservative tux.
With the face
of a horse's ass.
In Iraq, my administration looked at the intelligence, and we saw a threat. Members of Congress looked at the intelligence, and they saw a threat. The United Nations Security Council looked at the intelligence, and it saw a threat.
Very funny.
Tell us what you think. Call Guy James now, 1-866-546-5254.
Yes, indeed. Love to hear from you. Say, we got some breaking news for all of you that haven't heard it yet. And we thank the folks over in the Head On Radio Network chat room for letting us know the heads up. This is news from ABC News. The New Jersey Supreme Court has ruled that same-sex couples must be afforded the same rights and benefits as married couples. So New Jersey becomes the second state to allow that. Wonder how long it'll be. Decades, I suspect, before most of the states. Well, all the states will probably never do that. I don't think. I can think of a few that would never do it. I mean, I know never's a long time. But, anyway, that's big news. And, again, from ABCNews.com, New Jersey Supreme Court, same-sex couples must be afforded the same rights and benefits as married couples. It will be interesting to see how that plays in the political arena the rest of the day. You know, the fundies and the right-wingers are going to play that up. Oh, see, these Democrats. Will that hurt Menendez in New Jersey? Will it help him? I don't know. What are your thoughts on it? I wonder. I know one thing. We just played that little ditty from Rush Limbaugh. I think he stepped in it yesterday when he talked about Michael J. Fox. There has been a huge outcry over that, and just a lot of outrage. And Limbaugh has got the vilification that he most certainly deserves in this situation. What a bastard he is. And Fox has also recorded ads for Democrats Ben Cardin of Maryland and Jim Doyle of Wisconsin. And according to the Washington Post, he's also made plans to appear at events for two Democrats, Senator Robert Menendez of New Jersey and Tammy Duckworth, a candidate for Congress from Illinois. So, interesting. Michael J. Fox. Could Michael J. Fox swing this election? Entirely possible. Entirely possible. 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254. We do hope you'll give us a call. I thought it was interesting when I saw Bush talk about one more time, we're not going to pull out of Iraq until the mission is complete. And here I've been laboring under the opinion, just taking him at his word, clear back in 2003, standing on the deck of the USS Abraham Lincoln, when he said the mission was accomplished then. Isn't that the same as complete? I thought so. Very odd. Very odd. He said he met today with his top advisors and military commanders on Iraq, but he offered no indication of change in strategy. This was Saturday, actually, where he vowed to pull out U.S. troops. Not until the mission is complete, and said one of the causes of the increased violence in Iraq is the enemy's desire to break America's resolve. Well, no kidding. and we've got Cheney out there telling anybody that'll listen, hey, if we pull out of there, they're going to follow us home. That reminds you of one of those old cowboy and Indian movies. Cowboys took off, and the Indians were following them on the horses. Is that what's going to happen? They're just going to follow us right home? They got little boats and just going to come right on over here? Going to follow us home, Cheney says, if we leave there. Who's going to follow us home? The insurgents? I think all the Iraqi citizens that are fighting in this conflict right now, the Bush War, I think they'll just stay at home and be damn glad the Americans are gone, don't you? I don't think there's any bigger chance of an Al-Qaeda member coming over then as there is right now. And unless you be deceived by this administration, and is this one of these things you say, that if you say they can come and round you up for aiding and abetting the enemy, I'm thinking that if you're an Al-Qaeda guy and you get on a ship and come over to Canada, drive down through Montreal and over to Windsor and like that and drive, out to Alberta someplace. Maybe even Saskatchewan. You know, drive up to North Dakota and just drive across the... I mean, you can just drive right across the border. I don't get this. They'll follow us home. Hell, they wouldn't have to follow us home. They could come here right now. Do you have any doubts about that? That they can come here right now if they want to? Do you have any doubts that there aren't Al-Qaeda people in this country right this minute? And yet we've got that son of a bitch, Dick Cheney, driving around, you know, all over the country. So they're going to follow us home if we leave Iraq. We don't dare leave Iraq because the terrorists are going to follow us home. Look out. Be afraid. Jeez. How does he get away with this? What kind of morons sit and listen to that kind of stuff and suck it up? How stupid do you have to be to listen to that day after day and buy it? Ooh. Mama. I don't think I count any... friends of mine in that class. God. Let's go to phones. Well, we got a busy signal on the phone there. Don't know what happened there. If you are one that called, give us a call back. Odd how the phone works perfect all day long in the studio. We've got six lines here. And come time for the show, and sometimes some of them aren't working right. It makes me wonder. I'm getting that way. You know, I'm really tired of these phony Republicans talking to us about support the troops. If you support the troops, you have to support the war. You can't support the troops without supporting the war. You know, we hear that all the time. No. You know, I've got a bumper sticker on my car that says, support the troops, bring them home now. That's how I support the troops. But there are other ways to support the troops. And the little question I wanted to bring up is, how well are the Republicans supporting the troops? And what I think separates the men from the boys is not how you support the troops when they got a rifle in their hand, when they're over there doing your evil bidding, when they're over there following the orders that you give them, the orders that they have to follow. They have no choice. I think the proof in the pudding is how you treat them when you come home and they're veterans and they need... They need care. They need medical care. They need assistance from the VA and so forth. And isn't it interesting that the group Iraq and Afghanistan Vets of America have put out a list of all the House of Representatives and all of the Senate and how they have voted on 324 funding issues for vets over the past 5 years. 324 issues, 5 years involved, and every single Democratic senator, every one, was ranked higher than the highest ranked Republican on voting for veterans issues. Many of the... They graded them A through... A, B, C, D, F, just like in school. And many, many, many of the Republican senators ended up with D's and F's. But the very best rated Republican was ranked lower than the lowest ranked Democrat. For example, in Alabama, Senator Jeff Sessions. This is ranked by a group of veterans. The veterans. And you can Google this, you don't have to Google it, www.iava.org, iava.org. You can go there and find this information. Take Alabama, for example. Their senators, Jeff Sessions, rated an F by the veterans and how the veterans on veterans' bills that were voted on 324. Richard Selby rated a D. In Alaska, Murkowski and Stevens both ranked D. In Arizona, Kyle, a D minus. McCain, a veteran himself, a D. Arkansas, Blanche Lincoln, a B plus. Mark Pryor, a B. California, Barbara Boxer, a B plus. Let's look down through some of this list. See if we separate, how we separate these people. Colorado, Senator Wayne Allard, a D. Senator Salazar, a B plus. Connecticut, Lieberman, a B plus. Chris Dodd, an A minus. Delaware, Joe Biden, a B plus. Thomas Carper, B plus. Florida. Well. Let's see what our dynamic people here in Florida did. Senator Mel Martinez, a D. Bill Nelson, an A minus. Catherine Harris, a C minus. Speaking of representatives, Mark Foley, a B minus. Well, Connie Mack, a D. In Georgia, Senator Saxby Chambliss, a man I have much contempt for, a man who will wallow in the mud as dirty as it can possibly get politically against former Senator Max Cleland. Senator Saxby Chambliss, on the 300-odd issues that the Senate voted on, he's rated a D minus, as a matter of fact, a D minus. And Johnny Isaacson, an F in Georgia. So as we go down through this list, and once again, let me remind you that the very highest-ranked Republican ranked lower than the lowest-ranked of all of the Democrats. That's a very profound statement, I think, about the Republicans on support our troops, because they don't. They don't support our troops at all. They know it. You know it. That's just how it is. Hey, we're going to pause for a quick break. We'll be back in a moment.
For the past 20 years, I've been voting Republican. The Republicans promised to reduce my taxes, lower my electric bills, and fix our school funding system. Well, I don't know about you, but my property taxes go up every year, my electric bills are through the roof, and the school funding system is still broken. I've had enough. When I get in the voting booth on November 7th, I'm not voting Republican anymore. I'm going to vote Democrat, and I hope you'll join me.
We look to the day when you can live in freedom, and America and Iran can be good friends and close partners in the cause of peace.
See, this is where we get a really bad reputation. I live in a country where I'm not even sure if my vote's going to count in November. How free are you? How free are the people on the Gulf Coast? How free are the families that still grieve for the bodies dragged out of Aracoma and Saco? How free are they? He throws around precious terms with precious little regard for them. How free are we that chose by a wide margin in the year 2000, November 2000, we chose a man named Al Gore to be the President of the United States? How free are we that we were saddled with this ignorant, ignorant, hateful little man? How free are we? How free? I'm Bob Kincaid. Join me weeknights, 7 to 10 Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
James Baker says that he's looking for something between cut and run and stay the course.
We've never been stay the course, George.
We will stay the course. We will complete the job in Iraq.
If we leave the streets of Baghdad before the job is done, we will have to face the terrorists in our own cities. We will stay the course. We will help this young Iraqi democracy succeed.
We will stay the course until the job is done, Steve. And the citizens of Iraq need to know we will stay the course. And that's why we're going to stay the course in Iraq. They want to shake our will. And so we've got tough action in Iraq. But we will stay the course.
So, Mr. Bartlett, staying the course is no longer the operative strategy?
Well, Hannah, it's never been a stay-the-course strategy. Strategically, we think it's very important that we stay in Iraq and we win in Iraq. And if we were to cut and run and go and leave that country too early, it would be a disaster for American policy. But what we aren't doing is sitting there with our heads in the sand. We're completely changing and making tactical changes on a week-by-week basis as we respond to the enemy's reactions to our strategies.
We'll stay the course until the job is done.
It's absolutely essential that we stay the course.
You just got to stay the course.
We're just going to stay the course. And the citizens of Iraq need to know we will stay the course.
The second thing you do is you stay the course.
But we have to stay the course. And yet we must stay the course because the end result is in our nation's interest. We'll stay the course. We'll stay the course. We're there to stay the course.
Stay the course.
We're going to stay the course in Iraq. If we stay the course, we stay the course. Listen, we've never been stay the course.
It's never been a stay the course strategy.
No, it's never been stay the course. Never been stay the course. Welcome back to the Guy James Show. I hope you don't get tired of that, but because I don't get tired of listening to it, and I'll probably play that now and then just to remind everybody what a bunch of liars these people really are. They swore an oath not long ago, but we're going to stay the course. They've been swearing an oath for the last how long now? They get all their little Republican friends together at their little get-togethers at their big money-raising thing, and he stands there and gets everybody standing up and romping and stomping. We're going to stay the course, by God, because I'm tough. I'm a war president, and we're going to win this war no matter what it takes. I swear to you, we ain't never going to leave Iraq until we kill all them people. Gonna kill them all those insurgents and all those al-Qaedas, and we'll get that bin Laden. Don't you worry. Don't you worry one little bit. We'll get them. He stands and tells people that. Stands and tells them that. You know, I'm just at a loss sometime when I start thinking about these people. I really am. At a loss. There's times you just don't know what to say. Stay the course, and now they're trying to convince us that there's been some sort of a major change in Iraq. Now, there hadn't been any changes. Things have been going along status quo for a long time now, long time. And isn't it odd? Right before the election, they come up and say, well, we never actually said stay the course. I meant something else. I meant that we're gonna win. We're gonna win that war, and we're gonna stay there no matter what it takes, and no matter how many billion dollars that we have to borrow from other countries to continue this war. If we have to break the financial backs of every working American, we're going to stay there until again. Because after all, it is just a transfer of funds. It's a transfer of funds from Joe Smith from South Bend, Indiana, working in the factory there, to one of the big shots over at Halliburton. That's how we transfer money. That's how it is. We're transferring money all from you folks. I don't know. It's a tough situation. Somebody let me know on the internet. Is our signal up and good? Okay, we're up and good. Somebody had me worried there on the chat room. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. We hope you'll join us today. The White House, and here's something that I'm so damn mad about. I really am. I hope you'll sympathize with me on this. I'm counting on your support. I was really pissed off. the Washington Post today, and you know, here I am. I'm in this business of talk radio, chat radio, whatever you want to call it. I'm in this. This is what I do, among other things. And I pick up the Washington Post, and I can't tell you how discouraged it made me to read this article. It says the White House has tried to rev up its base in various ways. Bush has given interviews to Fox News host Bill Riley, the Wall Street Journal, and groups of conservative columnists and talk show host. Cheney appeared last week on Rush Limbaugh's show and yesterday gave an interview to conservative television and radio commentator Sean Hannity. Well, that's all right. I did not expect them to give me an interview with Junior and Darth Cheney. I held no illusions there. I did not expect an interview with either of those fellows. I know there's a lot of conservative commentators. But here's the part that gets me. To maximize the blitz, the White House set up a tent on the North Lawn yesterday and let 41 talk radio hosts broadcast live during the day. Since it was on government property, Radio Day included outlets such as National Public Radio, but this little thing here says it's mostly conservative talk. Mostly conservative talk? Do any of you know of any liberal broadcasters that were invited to this little soiree in the tent at the White House on government property? Notice I said liberal broadcasters. I claim to be liberal. Count it on your hands how many broadcasters claim to be liberal. Okay? Liberal. The word liberal. 41 of them show up there. And Tony Snow says this is a chance to talk to people and get heard. And he did more than 20 interviews yesterday. I thought he sounded a little hoarse last night when he was saying that he thought that that thing was... oh, no. Someone has just offended me. Gina on the chat room said, you would accept 30 minutes with Condi, wouldn't you? Oh, no. Oh, please. Oh, no. No, I wouldn't. So they got this big tent set up yesterday. And Karl Rove wandered into the tent with a piece of paper guiding him to a dozen interviews yesterday and others on hand. Now, listen to this. They brought out the stars yesterday. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld, Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, criminals all, Treasury Secretary Henry M. Paulson, Jr., Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff, another criminal, Energy Secretary Samuel Bodman, Agricultural Secretary Mike Johannes, whatever his name is, Health and Human Services Mike Leavitt, National Security Advisor Stephen Hadley, another criminal, Presidential Counselor and Fool and back-scratcher for G.W. Bush, Dan Bartlett. All those people were in this tent yesterday, and I didn't get invited, and I don't know anybody who did. I mean, Hannity and Bortz, and have you noticed lately how Bortz is sucking up? Well, he's a libertarian. All of a sudden, he gets invited to the White House, to the Oval Office, and he's a big-shot Republican now. it's funny what a little money will do to you. It really is. Turn you into a whore. That's what most of those people are. Sean Hannity's a political whore. Rush Limbaugh, of course, is the champion political whore. And, you know, your Bortz, your Laura Ingraham, and I'll be nice. I won't say anything about her. Mike Gallagher, political whore. But Iraq was the subject of discussion and all this thing that went on in the tent on the White House lawn yesterday, and I did not get invited, and I'm pissed. I really am. That was, I hope the Guinness Book of World Record people were there, because they had to be setting a record for bullshit yesterday on the White House lawn. If there was 40 conservative right-wing freaking radio broadcasters there, the crap must have been flying knee-deep. And there had to be some kind of a Guinness World Record of lies and propaganda told within a period of a couple of hours or however many hours they did it. Probably Man, I bet it smelled in that tent. Had to. Likes a handy. I would like to meet Sean Hannity one time. Just one time. Really would. How many of you, and this is the land of the free and home of the brave, and we have freedom of speech in this country. And here's a nice little entry for the Bush administration list of achievements. Out of 168 countries rated by the group Reporters Without Borders, the United States ranked 53rd this year for press freedom. Now, mind you, here we are with the Statue of Liberty in the harbor, New York Harbor, and we're the land of the free and home of the brave, and we have been touting for years how free we are, and we got free speech, and Bush is saying, they hate us for our freedom, they hate us for our freedom, they sure as hell do, they hate us for our freedom. And we're ranked 53rd out of 168 countries for press freedom. That's down from, we were ranked 44th last year and 17th in 2002. Unfortunately, 2002 was the first year the rankings were produced, so we really can't get a full and proper estimate of just how much we've slipped under George W. Bush. I wonder if we were number one before that. And shouldn't the alleged world champion of freedom, the midwife of democracy to oppress people worldwide, the rocker of the cradle of liberty, do a little better than have almost one-third of the world's nations ahead of it in the ranking of freedom of the press? Isn't press freedom supposed to be a key cornerstone of freedom and democracy and liberty? So here we are preaching freedom, and in many cases we don't have it. Interesting. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. We hope you'll give us a call. You got any kids in college right now? Anybody? Anybody? Kids in college? My niece sent me a story talking about kids in college right now. About debt for college kids. Campus Progress, Youth Organizing Division of the Center for American Progress, has launched Debt Hits Hard, a national campaign to raise public awareness of how ineffective federal policies weaken educational opportunity and feed the dramatic growth of student debt. Total student debt in the U.S. totals more than $438 billion. $438 billion. That's an incredible number. The average college senior now graduates with $3,200 in credit card debt. Well, I know my niece doesn't have that. And $18,900 in student loans. Wow. And between 2001 and 2010, 2 million academically qualified students will not go to college because they can't afford it. Man, oh man, what a sad situation. The most advanced nation on earth, or we were anyway for a while, I don't know if we still are, 2 million kids qualified to go to college and can't because they didn't have the money. What a terrible, terrible thing that is. Thought we were better than that. Well, we're going to take a moment, check our telephones and see if they're working right today. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. We hope you'll give us a call. Stand by for news coming up in just a couple of minutes. A couple of seconds, actually. A few seconds. You're listening to the Head On Radio Network. Guy James here with you on the Guy James Show.
This is the Quality News Network. President Bush saying this morning that while he's concerned about the turn of events in Baghdad this month, a month during which 93 U.S. soldiers and Marines and 300 Iraqi forces have been killed, he maintains that progress is still being made and that it remains critical for security in this country that the U.S. defeats the insurgency in Iraq. President adding that the U.S. has no intention of taking sides in a sectarian struggle and that while our goals in Iraq are not changing, our tactics for achieving those goals remain flexible. Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki is currently at odds with the U.S. over yesterday's raid by U.S. and Iraqi forces on Sadr City, a stronghold for Shiite militia inside Baghdad. Maliki is complaining that he was not consulted in advance and is insisting it will not happen again. He's also taking issue with yesterday's statements by U.S. General George Casey that the Iraqi government has agreed to set a timetable by the end of this year. Maliki says that statement is not true. U.S. troops are stepping up their search for a missing GI of Iraqi descent who disappeared several days ago while visiting relatives in Baghdad on an unauthorized visit. DNA tests now prove that an al-Qaeda operative wanted by the U.S. for the bombings in 1998 of U.S. embassies in Africa died in April in Pakistani airstrikes near the border with Afghanistan. An AP photographer kidnapped in the Gaza Strip earlier this week by Palestinian gunmen has been freed unharmed. House Speaker Dennis Hastert says the House Ethics Committee, which is looking into the Mark Foley case, needs to wind up its investigation soon and make a determination about who knew what and when they knew it. The UN General Assembly resumes voting today to fill the remaining open seat on the Security Council, one that's earmarked for a country from Latin America. Venezuela, which was competing with Guatemala for that seat, is bowing out and throwing its support to Bolivia. French President Jacques Chirac is in China for a four-day visit and meetings with Chinese President Hu Jintao. Topics of discussion are expected to include the North Korean missile crisis. Meanwhile, Russian President Vladimir Putin is saying that if the world wants to rein in North Korea's nuclear program, it must tread lightly and not push Pyongyang into a corner. He said he prefers negotiations. NATO troops in Afghanistan have seized more than 9 tons of hashish on a major smuggling route in the southeastern province. Since April, troops have confiscated more than 13.5 tons of the narcotic, which is used by the Taliban to fund its rebellion. And New Mexican authorities have discovered what they believe to be secret documents from the Los Alamos National Weapons Laboratory, documents that were found in the mobile home of a suspected drug dealer. This is the Quality News Network, Science and Business, coming up.
Tune in to the Quality News Network on election night to learn the results of perhaps the most important midterm elections in our nation's history. QNN will go beyond the scorecard reporting of the numbers. We will delve into the reasons why America voted the way we did and what it may mean for our future. Over the past 6 months, QNN has conducted over 215 interviews with candidates in the 2006 elections. All of the candidates are challengers for House, Senate, and gubernatorial seats from all parties from all 50 states. You can hear these interviews at qualitynewsnetwork.com. These are the people who have carried the banner of democracy during this vital election campaign, and they will be joining us on the air to talk about their races, why they won or lost, and what they learned about the process and the voters. So tune in to the Quality News Network on election night and learn where we are going from those who are going to lead us. Now back to the news.
Researchers with NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, say that 60% of the world's coral reefs could be dead within 25 years, partly due to global warming. Sales of existing homes are down again for the sixth consecutive month. They were down 1.9% in September and are down 2.5% from September last year. That's the largest year-over-year decline in the 40 years that the National Association of Realtors has been keeping records. Boeing reports its third-quarter earnings fell 31%, but higher jet sales helped boost its earnings by 19%. GM has posted a third-quarter loss of $115 million, but that's far better than its $1.7 billion loss of a year ago. Imclone Systems has named financier Carl Icahn as its new chairman and is reporting that its third-quarter earnings rose 85%, far exceeding the expectations of analysts. And the top-selling dead celebrity for years, a title owned by Elvis Presley, this year goes to Nirvana's Kurt Cobain, thanks to the sale of part of the group's music catalog by his widow, Courtney Love. Elvis is now number two, followed by cartoonist Charles Schulz, Beatle John Lennon, and physicist Albert Einstein. Gold is trading at $591.50 an ounce this hour. Silver's at $11.90. And light sweet crude oil up $1.77 a barrel, trading at $61.12. Trading is mixed on Wall Street. The Dow is down 21 points at 12,107. But the Nasdaq is up 3 at 2348, and the S&P 500 is up 1 at 1379. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Diana Walter. It's now 5 past the hour.
what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Well, welcome back, everybody. I hope you got some good out of the news. I didn't have a chance to listen. I was busy during, so I hope there were no earth-shaking developments while the news was on today. Isn't it terrible of me? I'm always busy during the news and the breaks and so forth. And, hey, as promised, and I won't waste any time here, as promised, I told you when we started off today, and I've reminded you a couple of times, and everybody on the chat room and on Democratic Underground and so forth, we have Celeste Zappala right with us right now. Celeste is active with Gold Star Families Speak Out, and she is one of our I search for a word that adequately covers it. Let me just say she lost her son in the Bush War in Iraq. Celeste, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
Glad to have you along with us today. And first of all, you know, I hardly ever know what to say to anybody that's lost somebody in the war. I do call it the Bush War because I don't know what else to call it. I don't think it was something that we had to be in and so forth.
No, but, it's an unnecessary war. That's certainly true.
Your son, he's Sergeant Sherwood Baker.
Right. He was 30 years old. He was Army National Guard. He was from upstate Pennsylvania and was a father and a caseworker for mentally challenged adults. He was a union representative, a musician, a disc jockey, a beautiful son. And he was the first Pennsylvania National Guardsman to be killed in combat since 1945.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Since 1945. How many guardsmen? Do you have any idea how many guardsmen from Pennsylvania are?
We've lost a total of, I think, 133 Pennsylvanians, and I believe 13 were guard.
Oh, my.
My numbers could be wrong, but I think 13 are guard.
I didn't realize Pennsylvania had lost that many.
Yeah.
I know Ohio's lost a significant number, and I know Illinois has. And your organization, the Gold Star Families Speak Out, what do you stand for, and what are you trying to accomplish?
Well, we are aligned and a chapter of the Military Families Speak Out, which is a organization of several thousand families who have loved ones who are serving in Iraq, who are serving in the military, and who are opposed to the war. So we are, unfortunately, the chapter within the group who have lost our soldiers to this war. And our position is that we want the war to end and to bring our troops home now, to take care of them when they get here, and to never again go to a war that's based on lies. And for us, it's very important that the lives of our soldier children and spouses and friends are not forgotten or lost, that we never want them to be thought of as just, you know, casual numbers. We talk about the casualties, the fallen, but you know, I want people to think about 2,804 real people and real families and the impact that has across the country. I think that our people died unnecessarily, and I hope to God that it stops so that there won't be any more people like us.
Well, the president said in his news conference today, and let me quote him, he said, "I've met too many wives and husbands who've lost their partners in life, too many children who won't ever see their mom and dad again." Bush said, "I owe it to them and to the families who still have loved ones in harm's way to ensure that their sacrifices are not in vain," unquote.
I think that's such a hollow statement. I can't tell you how offensive I find that. You know, to say that more people should die because of a large number of people have already died for a terrible mistake is just a dreadful twisting of logic and good sense. I would have been grateful if the president had come out and said, we've made some really horrible mistakes here, and I'm going to stand up, and I'm going to fire this Secretary of Defense who has made so many errors, and I'm going to humbly try to figure out how we get out of there. I would have appreciated something like that. I thought the press conference was just, it actually made me feel ill, because I listened to it and I kept waiting for, can we hear some truth? Could we hear some responsibility being taken? He said at one point something like, well, I'm the accountable person. But he's not, because he doesn't accept any responsibility. You know, it's always, you know, there's always these twisted moments of, you know, the intelligence was bad and the generals didn't say anything. And, you know, but that doesn't bring anybody back, and that doesn't prevent other people from being killed and maimed and blown up, not to mention the Iraqis. My God, how many? We don't even know the numbers. The only people who know the numbers are the people who lost them. They know who died, but the rest of the world doesn't really know, and it's sad to say, I think that most of America doesn't actually care that not only are we losing Americans, 2, 3, 4 in a day, but Iraqis are being lost by the dozens every day. And there was nothing that the president said that made any sense to me that shows us a way out. And I really think the real issue people should be listening to was what the Prime Minister Maliki had to say in response, which, you know, he's saying that no one's going to tell them when, you know, a timetable or that the things that Bush was saying, he's saying because of the elections. And just today, you know, the U.S. and some of the Iraqi forces went into Sadr City. Well, the Prime Minister disagreed with that action and was very angry and didn't want the U.S. forces to go into Sadr City. So if they're not willing to go after the militias, how in the world does this ever end? And if there is not an agreement between Maliki and the U.S. government, how can we talk about Iraq being a sovereign nation? I mean, it's nonsensical. And to just, you know, perpetuate this kind of game of words, it just seems to me a game of words. And in the meantime, people die hour by hour by hour.
And right now we're playing politics with it, is what I'm afraid. I wanted to ask you about a statement, and forgive me for asking you this.
Sure, it's okay.
He mentioned that. And it's hard for me to ask you this, but he mentioned that he didn't want their sacrifices, anybody else's sacrifices, to be in vain.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about that? How do you feel about your son? Was it in vain?
My son died needlessly. It didn't need to happen, particularly in his circumstance. He was protecting the Iraq Survey Group. They were the people who were looking for the weapons of mass destruction in April of 2004. That's several months after pretty much everyone agreed there weren't any. And had so for our particular situation, it just grieves me even more to hear something like that. You know, he'll not have died in vain if our country wakes up and takes responsibility for what's happening and tries to seek a real solution to the terrible problems in the Middle East. But he will have died in vain if it just means that another 2,000 people die coming up in order to perpetuate this preposterous war.
Well, do you think he's sincere about wanting to get it over with, or from my end, it looks like he's not serious at all about getting it over with.
Well, I don't know if he knows what that is. I mean, sometimes I think that the administration is really fails to look beyond its own ideology and charade, and you know, what I think is really important is to listen to the generals as they leave the army, and they say, we tried to tell them what was wrong, and they wouldn't listen. And right now there are 65 soldiers who are signing a petition of redress because they're active duty soldiers saying this is wrong, we shouldn't be there, we can't do this. And that's a very brave thing for a soldier to do. I wish there were more brave generals who would just say, you know, this policy is a failure and it has to be changed. And I wish that there were more brave politicians. You know, in my mind, I've been speaking since since April of 2004, since my son was killed, because I made a promise to him that I would tell the truth for him. And we were, you know, voices in the wilderness then. And finally, you know, people are beginning to hear and say, you know, majority of Americans are opposed to the war. But there's still politicians who can't seem to say straight out, face to face, we're opposed to this war, we need to leave, we need to figure out a better way in Iraq. And the terrible mistakes were made and we're all culpable. You know, you don't hear that said. And
let me ask you a personal question. Did your son, when they brought him back here, did he come to Dover, Delaware?
He did.
Mm-hmm. Do you, as a mother, feel that photos of that are too personal? That the public should not see that?
No, I think that they should. I think that people should see those pictures. I think the flag should be permanently at half staff. I think that the names of the fallen soldiers should be on every newspaper front page every day. Absolutely. I think that everybody has to take responsibility and be touched and affected by what's happening. There is no comfort in thinking that the names of the fallen and their lives and their families are hidden away. That's not privacy. You know, that's disrespect.
That's exactly the way I feel as well. Celeste, I'd like to thank you so much for being on the program and telling us your story. I appreciate it so much. And continued good luck to you to spread the word, and we continue to do it here on this program. Thank you
so
much.
Thank you very much. Please call me again.
Thank you.
Take care.
Gosh. Hard to talk to those people. Hard to talk to a lady like that. Very hard to talk to a lady like that. We could sit and discuss whether somebody was lost, their life was lost in vain from now until forevermore. But I can't think it's anything else. I really can't. I can't, as try as I might, I've tried so hard to see something good to come out of this, and I can't. I want to find something good that can come out of this, and I cannot. I've searched and searched and searched and thought of all the ends, thought of all the results that may come from this, thought of all the various ways that this conflict might end, thought of all the things that might continue on in the future, whether we'll have a continued military presence in that area or not. Tried to think of every aspect of this thing. Tried to think of one thing positive that would come out of this Bush war in Iraq, and I can't. Nothing. It's not one of those things where you put it on the scales and you've got 50 bad things and 52 good things. There are no good things. You throw this on the scale and it's bang, it's down to, you know, there's nothing there. Please, somebody convince me that there's something, anything positive that could come out of this. Anything. I don't know. And it's troubling as an American. It's very troubling as an American. Hasn't all of the public thought this through? You know, let's be selfish for a minute and let's forget the personal stories like Celeste we just heard. And the 2,800 other stories that there are just like that. And the thousands upon thousands that are maimed for life. Let's just think about the selfish part of it for a moment. Let's think about the greater good, as it were, for the nation. What is the greater good of this thing for our nation? What? Are we safer? No. We know beyond a shadow of a doubt we're not safer. Throw that argument right out the window. It's ridiculous that we're safer. I think any intelligent person, any thinking person, knows that we are far less safe now than we were when we staged this illegal, immoral war into Iraq. I don't think anybody with an ounce of patriotism and intellect can argue that point. You say, well, people have different opinions on it. No. I don't I always try and come at an argument from both points. I always try and make it a point when I'll sit and argue with somebody about anything, about politics, about anything. I always like to prepare myself so that I can argue both sides of the issue, that I can see the other side, and it helps you. It helps you on your own if you can, you know, anticipate what the other person's going to say and what they're going to do in an argument, in a debate about something. So you prepare yourself. And you know, we did this in I was on the debating team in college. You always did this. So you could argue both sides of the issue. And it's an intelligent way to come at something like this. But try as I might, I cannot argue this from the other side because I cannot see anything positive at all for our nation to come out of this. Never mind the 2,800 souls that have lost their lives in that godforsaken country. Never mind the hundreds of thousands of innocent Iraqis that have lost their lives as well. Never mind all of that. How can it be that the most powerful military on the face of this planet has got themselves involved, and dare I say it, in a quagmire that is unwinnable from a military or a political standpoint? It is unwinnable. And yet we have the people on the right defending this every single day. God help me understand it, because I don't. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. I hope you'll give us a call. I do want to hear from you. I don't know. I'm so frustrated. Here we are at an election time, and it's usually a fun time when it's an election. This one isn't. This one isn't fun at all. This one's for survival. This isn't merely to see who's going to get to make a few little laws that don't make a whole hell of a lot of difference one way or another or like that. This one's for survival of our nation. That's what this election's for. And I'm so perplexed when I think that some of these races, I see some of these races have tightened up in the past few days. And that they're making a comeback. And their money is starting to make a difference in some of these races. I'm still confident that we'll take the House. The Senate, I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure at all. But what are voters thinking? How can you look at this war from any perspective whatsoever and take a look at it and say, hey, this has got to go. This has got to stop. It's got to end. We've got to find a way to get this over with. I don't know. I don't know how that's possible. Let's go with the phones. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, this is Juanita.
Hi, Juanita.
That was a lovely person you had on, that lady.
Yeah, very nice lady. Very, very
yes.
Nice.
And I'd like to say that I heard part of a broadcast. I think it's that Malkin girl that's written a book about Sandy.
Oh, Michelle Malkin?
I think it's her, Melody, or one of them.
Melanie Morgan.
Written a book about...
Yeah, Melanie Morgan.
Sandy.
Yeah.
And can you believe this? This was from the Hannity show, Hannity. And she was talking about all the money, you know, that had been given to Sandy. But one thing she was talking about, Sandy, was looking at porn on...
Mm-hmm. Hey, let me... we need to hang on. Just to show you, we don't miss a thing on this program.
Okay.
Listen
you probably
listen to this.
Yeah.
The media was a willing and complicit factor in this whole story. Cindy Sheehan was not just an ordinary suburban Vacaville, California mom who suddenly planted herself and woke up one morning and said, I've got to do something about the war in Iraq, and went to Crawford to ask the president, what noble cause did my son die for? What happened was she was financially assisted. Hundreds and thousands of dollars were spent to help her create a media message, which she, in fact, began unspooling every night on the 6 o'clock news.
Let me just say something. I find that going after Cindy Sheehan the way you are despicable. This is a woman who lost a son. Everybody grieves differently. In your book, for example, you talk about Cindy Sheehan having an affair with Lou Rockwell. You say she's addicted to online porn, which has nothing to do with anything as far as I'm concerned. You tie her to David Duke and the KKK and Hugo Chavez. And I really think it's disgusting.
Well,
I really think it's disgusting what you're doing in terms of talking about her being online in chat rooms, doing porn stuff. What does it have to do with anything?
Let me answer that question for you. I'm happy to answer it, Alan, because she introduced the subject of her personal life herself. She created a biography for herself that was largely untrue and uncorrected by the media. We were doing a biography on Casey Sheehan and Justin Johnson, the two boys who were best friends. The families were also part of the story, and we also dealt specifically with the Johnson family, who also had addiction that became part of their reaction, their extreme reaction to their grieving. And we were sorry to have to report this kind of...
You didn't have to report anything.
Why would we be dishonest in doing a biography?
First of all, I think it's a smear job to talk about her online, having affairs, doing online porn, as if that has anything to do with anything. This is a woman. Everybody goes through a grieving process differently.
Absolutely.
And the Johnson family clearly did it differently than the Sheehan family.
Alan, the truth is the truth. It's not conservative. It's not liberal. It's the truth. Some people can't handle it. In this case, this just fills out a little bit of the story. It had to be in there. I mean, we talk about instant messages with other people now, don't we? And I know you talked about it because I've heard you.
Evil Melanie Sloan on the Hannity Show, and that's exactly what you're talking about here, Juanita.
I couldn't hear it over the phone.
Oh, you couldn't? I'm sorry.
I've heard it. Yeah, that's what I'm sure that, and surprisingly calms.
Yeah, I mean, they just...
He said, so what if she was...
Yeah, for a change, Alan Combs stood up to somebody on the program.
He surely did. Well, I'm a reporter. But, you know, I think they're just all showing their really true colors and, you know.
Yeah, they are. And the desperation starting to come forth, and we see it.
The thing I did want to say, too, about the mothers, you know, that have lost their children, I have heard it said, you know, that, well, if we stop now, all those others have died in vain. Well, you know, I don't get it.
Well, it's like they said of Vietnam. I forget what politician said it. Maybe it was John Kerry way back when. I think it was, now that I think of it.
Who's
going to be the last one?
Yeah.
Who's going to be the last one to die in vain for a war we never should have been in the first place?
Right.
I'm pretty sure it was John Kerry.
I think so, when he was in that hearing. Yeah, I believe it was when he was in that hearing. And anyway, I could tell you a little something about racism, because I was raised in that.
What state were you raised in?
Florida.
Oh, okay. You're a native Floridian. I didn't know.
Well, I wasn't born here, but I was raised here.
Okay.
Since I was a baby.
Ah.
I was born in Georgia, I know. But anyhow, one thing that stands out to me is, like, in, you were talking about the different designations for the fountains and all. Down here, it was white and colored.
Ah.
And you had, like, colored waiting rooms in the bus stations and the doctor's offices and all. And one thing that stood out to me was that the hospital, the basement was the designated colored for coloreds.
Oh, my.
But if they ran out of room, it was like the buses, you know. If they ran out of room, then a white person would go down there. And I remember my mother was a patient down there one time, and she loved it.
Oh, my.
But they were so good to her. But and then, like, your the women, you know, they could only be maids, or at the hospital they could only do cleanup or work in the kitchen. They could never have any kind of an office job, or much less be a head of any kind of department.
Yes.
And so, and then the guys, I mean, they did, you know, like whatever they could find.
Sure, sure. Well,
but anyway,
it's a different time, and I hope we can. Oh, we can get away from all that.
But you know what? Those people have got an awful lot of love to put up with what they put up with.
Well, that's a fact.
Yeah.
We need to thank you for your call. You're a lovely person. And the people on our chat room really enjoy you. They wanted me to tell you
really?
How much they enjoy your call.
Well, thank you. And you're a lovely person also.
Thank you, Juanita.
Bye-bye. And I mean that.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And let's go over to line one here. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hello?
Hi, you're on.
Hi. William from Hollywood.
Hi, William.
How are you doing?
Good.
I was listening to your show. My stream keeps going on and off, but I heard you talking a little earlier about what's it going to take to end this war over there. You know?
Yeah.
I can only offer my perspective. I mean, when I think about just a few key issues, I mean, with those huge military bases they have there, it doesn't seem like they have any desire to pull out of that area. Ever.
I think you're exactly right. I agree with you.
I mean, you know, they've spent quite a bit of time and money and effort to put that in place, and it didn't take them long to do it.
Notice Bush wouldn't answer it today when they asked him about a permanent presence there. He wouldn't answer it.
Oh, yeah, I know. But, I mean, it's there. Everybody knows it's there.
Sure.
And there's more than one. And then when you look at the flips, I mean, you look at the troops over there, there doesn't seem to be any slowdown. I mean, this has been the worst month so far, you know, American deaths over there of troops. And then when you swing back over the United States, they talk about the economy, which is an absolute joke. You know, I don't know who they're trying to relate to.
Oh, but the stock market's way up.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's like, what we keep hearing.
How many people are there actually that are struggling to get by on a minimum wage that even pay any attention to the stock market? I mean,
yeah,
not even in their vocabulary, you know?
I can tell you my portfolio doesn't look very good. I don't even know where it is. I don't have one. And I think a lot of people are in that position that the stock market makes no you know, they give us that crap about, oh, well, it's going to trickle down and all that. You know, I'm tired of that one. I think everybody knows by now that that's a joke.
Yeah, we heard that 25 years, 26 years ago.
Right.
About a trickle down.
Money trickles up is where, mm-hmm. the way it goes. And I think we're all smart enough to have learned that story by now.
Yeah, and then, you know, just on the home front here, I mean, if you boil it down to like the victims of Katrina, look what's going on there. They had that on television for a day, and then it's gone. It's completely gone. And I heard a bit of Sarge trying to call in yesterday with the static.
Yeah.
And he's, you know, all I could pick up was his look worse than he thought it was. So,
oh, yeah, it's a terrible situation down there. And how much do you hear about it? I mean, it's you know, I'll bet you 90% of the American people have no idea how bad it is, still is down there. And yet it's a forgotten story.
It is. And that's such a crime because here's part of the United States. They act like it's not even part of the United States when they don't talk about it. And even when they do talk about it, it's like a distant, far-off land. And they haven't done anything. I mean, what was it not too long ago, Rocky, that fool came up to the White House to see Bush with his trailer?
Oh, remember yeah,
that?
Yeah.
They made this big deal about that.
Uh-huh.
And everything just evaporates. Everything that's going on in this country just evaporates. And what amazes me the most is there's so many people hurting in this country right now, which basically is not talked about much either, the economy and all that. It's not talked about. And I don't see a fix for any of this, you know?
No. Our government has forsaken those people down there. The people, I'm ashamed to say, a goodly number of the people in the United States have forsaken the soldiers that are in Iraq. We've just got a society sitting here going, oh, what the hell, it's okay. I mean, as long as it doesn't affect me on my front porch, why, it's all right. And, it saddens me to think that we've got a national psyche that heads in that direction. It really does.
Yeah, and the proof of that is, you know, I think, you know, the only answer to that is it is. If it doesn't affect me personally, then I don't care. I'm going to look the other way, and I'm going to go on with my life, and I'm going to ignore it. Because if that wasn't the case, why would we allow for 6 years now this excuse for a president and the rest of the Bush crime family to stay in office without millions of people, like I've heard said many times, actually, you know, walking up to the White House and taking the risk and pulling them out?
Yeah, well,
I mean, that seems to be the only answer. You know, I know a lot of people are counting their elections and they're counting the days, but is that going to make a difference?
Man, I hope so. It better. If it doesn't, we're going to be there's going to be a bunch. If we take over the House and hopefully the Senate as well, and a lot of this stuff doesn't get overturned and fixed, there's going to be a lot of really, really, really unhappy Democrats in this country.
Oh, yeah. And look at what they've got to fix.
Oh, yeah, that's true. But they better just get right at it. They just better get right at it.
Oh, they'd have to. It's almost like trying to flip a boulder over with a chopstick.
Oh, yeah. I don't envy them the task ahead. That's for sure. That is for sure. Hey, thanks for your call. Good to hear from you.
Thank you.
Gosh, I got a note here. I don't know whether to talk about it or not. How many of you have read the Daily Coast today? I haven't had a chance to go there right now. Johnny O has tipped me off to a story that's on Daily Coast right now that's really, As you know, we said on this story, and it's gotten, and please understand why I'm talking about this. I'm talking about this because of hypocrisy and dishonesty. It's the reason I want to bring this up. They're telling me that on Daily Coast that Charlie Crist said, I've never had sex with a man. A young rising star in the Republican Party has boasted to witness of his sexual relationship with Charlie Crist, the front runner in the Florida governor's race who has repeatedly denied that he's gay. The GOP staffer, 21-year-old Jason Weatherington, told friends at separate social functions in August that he had sex with Crist, according to two credible and independent sources who heard Weatherington make the claim firsthand. If that is true, and as you know, we had the third-party candidate for governor of Florida on this program telling us that Charlie Crist is gay and is hiding it. And, of course, that's not big news in Florida. I think it's been known for a long time. It's just the deceitfulness and the hypocrisy of it that's the news. That's what it is. And that could have an impact on the race here. I don't know. They tell me that a couple of polls have shown the governor's race here in Florida to have tightened up considerably. I don't know. I got a couple of really rotten letters yesterday from some local Republicans, and they don't like some things that we've had to say on the program, and you know that's just tough. And after reading their letters, and I know one of them, it reminded me of something, and I got to thinking about it. This whole Republican neocon fundamentalist Christian right-wing movement reminds me of something. It really does. We talked about several times on here about people voting against their own self-interest. And all of this reminds me, and think back some of you, it reminds me, and those of you on the phone, hang on, I'll be right with you. It reminds me of my friends who got involved in Amway years ago. Now all of you who made $1 million in Amway, this doesn't apply to you, but Rich DeVos and Jay Van Andel, who were the founders of Amway, They set out to convince millions of people that they could become millionaires by selling Amway products. And keep in mind, I want to make an analogy here to this, to the Republican Party and Van Andel and DeVos. And, you know, they wanted to prove that they could sell soap and cleaners and laundry detergent and all that sort of stuff and get filthy rich. But the big kicker was that you really didn't have to sell much of it yourself. You just had to go out and find a few schmucks to sell it for you. And then you could sit back and rake in the dough and retire to an island in the Caribbean somewhere with a Rolls Royce parked out front. They always showed those pictures and a few servants in your mansion. They love to show pictures of people with big fancy cars and big mansions. Get them all jacked up to how they could get those things and live a life of luxury too. Sound familiar to the Republican Party today? You know, all you had to do was sell a little soap. 10 meetings 3 times a week and rallies in other states and conferences and sales meetings and run your ass ragged to end up with $75 at the end of the month. Never mind that you'd spend more than that on gas and given about 40 hours of your time to selling soap so Van Andel and DeVos could be rich. And make no mistake about it, they did get very, very rich. A few other people got good at it and found lots of schmucks and got them to sell the soap for them so they could buy their mansion on the hilltop and their Jag or Corvette or whatever and play golf all day long. And there were a few who made some big money. I know one who did, but 99 out of 100 never made a dime. And they gave their labor, their expenses, they attended all those bullshit meetings for what? For the promise of getting rich. And that's my point here. Most of the schmucks eventually got the message and dropped out, poorer but wiser. But they were all after that gold ring. You know what I'm talking about? Kind of reminds you of the Republicans right now, doesn't it? They'll follow Junior Bush and company to hell and back because they believe Junior's going to make their lives really good for them. Yep. They'll get those big tax cuts, and they'll be wealthy, and they'll make it because Junior's going to make this economy great for the little guy. That's what they believe, and I know a few people like that. They voted against their own financial self-interest on the hope that the Republicans would wave some sort of a magic wand and make them rich by cutting their taxes, and the biggest lie of all, help the small businessman. Yes, sir. I'm going to vote for Junior Bush and all Republicans because they'll make me rich and I'll be righteous too because everybody knows the Republicans stand for family values and all that's good in the world. Damn, it must feel good to be a Republican right now, huh? I guess my point here is the gullibility of the public. The Amway people and the Republicans got a lot in common, to make no mistake about it. Well, most of them are Republicans, and most of them get screwed and screwed good, but it takes them a hell of a long time to feel it happening. And Rich DeVos, you all know his little boy's running for governor of Michigan, and his family owns the Orlando Magic basketball team, and they're beyond filthy rich right now. Why? Because there were plenty of schmucks for them to use, and most Republicans out there got to feel real used right now. Really used right now. Let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, Guy. It's Greg from Connecticut.
Hi, Greg.
I just wanted to...
Hey Greg, I got to ask you something.
Yes.
What'd you do with all that cash?
What cash?
Well, that Joe Lieberman petty cash.
Oh, well, you know, we in Connecticut are just benefiting from it so much. He saved the submarine base with it, you know?
Well, $375,000 worth of petty cash that he can't answer for in his campaign. I don't know. I ran across that today. It seemed a little odd to me.
Well, but you know everything like that. It's Clinton's fault. Anything is Clinton's fault.
I forgot.
You know, it's easy. Anyway, I just wanted to run by you. I don't know if you caught about the New Jersey Supreme Court decision.
Yeah.
And, you know, in general, I think it's a wonderful thing. And, you know, what they said is that, you know, that it's about equal rights. That they're not really using the word marriage. And, you know, I'm 100% for it. But I'm worried about what the backlash of the, quote, liberal media is going to be and how they're going to try and use this as a wedge issue 2 weeks before the election. And I want to know what you thought about that.
Well, they will use it as a wedge issue. I think they're probably in studios right now making ads. I'm sure they'll use it. And they'll probably beat up on Menendez. They'll beat up on the Democratic Party. They'll try and use it. But it's going to be interesting to see if that works in the East. What do you think?
Well, I don't know if it's going to get that much mileage here in Connecticut. I mean, because, you know, Connecticut was actually one of the leaders in domestic partner laws, you know. So I don't know what it'll do in New Jersey either. I'm sure that they'll try and make whatever hay they can out of it. But, you know, I'm more worried about the other states saying, well, you know, if those Democrats get in the minority, blah, 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 you know, I mean in the majority, you know, that's what I'm concerned about, you know. And for those who are saying, why has this happened now, it happened specifically because one certain judge turned 70 years of age today and had to retire, and this was her last ruling, you know. So it wasn't like a politically timed thing, but, you know, I'm just concerned about the outcome of it, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to find out where they go with it. And I think we'll find out within 24 hours where they'll go with it.
Well, and of course, you know, you have all the hypocrites out there, you know, people like Larry Craig of Idaho, you know, and Foley, who were so vehement about, supporting that, quote, Defense of Marriage Act. And then, you know, I'm sure Mr. Crist would be, too. And, you know, the hypocrisy is just unending, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it is the hypocrisy. That's the main point of it. That's the only point of it all.
Yeah.
I'll tell you.
Well, thanks a lot. Thanks again, Guy.
Thank you for calling.
Okay.
Makes me wonder. It really does. Will they try and make some political hay out of this? I don't know. Should be interesting. I don't know. I think we might pause for a quick break right here, right now, and we'll be back in just a moment or two. Don't go anyplace, and we'll be right back.
I am the happy senator elected on my own. When I speak out, I love to hear line. I'm not a left-wing nut. The GOP can't understand. It makes them bust a gut. Hillary. Hillary, Hillary, Hillary.
till tomb. They say that you know the winner 4 hours before dinner. I did not know a computer pro can now program clairvoyance too. Touch screen, you leave no paper trail. It's a good thing that you can never fail. You gave Bush 4007 in a town of just 11. But you can't speak, so there's less to leak, and we can't find who programmed you. Kiss my booty. That is unkind. Can you think they'll mind the degree that I left on you?
And we're back. Oh, what do we got here? About 8 minutes left in the show. Yeah, about 8 minutes left in the show. Still time for you to give us a call. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. You've been a quiet bunch today. You certainly have. You've had that chat room rolling along for sure. I can't wait to hear the local news tonight. See what they have to say about that Charlie Crist story. I got to find out if that's true. Interesting. Very interesting. Hey, I do want to remind everybody that tomorrow we are going to have with us Brad Friedman, of course, from bradblog.com. And he's going to be with us, I think, at 3:30. Yes, 3:30. And then Clint Curtis is going to join the fray at 4:05. So we'll have Brad and Clint and any of you that want to talk about black box voting, why, we're going to take that whole hour and do that. Well, hour and a half probably, as much time as you want to spend on it. It is a significant issue in this campaign, and it can make the difference. There is no question about it, with so many very, very close races. And I don't know how we're ever going to get away from having close races. I don't think you're going to see very many more races with somebody winning, you know, 68-32 or like that sort of thing. I just don't think we're going to see that very much anymore. And it wouldn't take a whole lot right now. You take a half a dozen or so of these close races around the country, and it stays a Republican majority. The Democrats could end up winning 35 seats or so. They could end up with 6. That's just how close these things are. And the Senate, I don't know. I think the Senate's a different story. I'm going to stick my neck out and say that we're going to win 5 Senate seats. That's what I'm going to say. I hope it's more. But then again, like I've warned everybody, don't forget, if it does become an issue, I think, without question, I think Lieberman switches. Pretty sure he'll do that. And why wouldn't he? Why wouldn't he? It's to his political advantage to do that, and Joe will do whatever is good for his for himself, period. Period. He'll do what's good for himself. And I was going to get into that petty cash story that's going on up there right now. I don't know. Joe has got a lot to answer for. Something at $387,000 in petty cash disbursements in the final days before the state's August Democratic primary. Now, that is a lot of petty cash, $387,000. And evidently, he's broken some campaign finance laws on this. So it'd be interesting to see how that all plays out. It really will. I know I don't have $387,000 in my petty cash fund. I think if I can tell you exactly where all the petty cash went out of my bill. It's too easy to keep track of. You know how it is. But do keep that in mind that tomorrow, I know many of you have asked about it, and so we're gonna oblige everybody. And Brad Friedman is anxious to come on and talk to us about the voting machines and where we're likely to have problems and where we're not, and what can happen and can't happen and so forth. And I do want to remind everybody that there's just a fortnight left until what is perhaps the most important election in American history, and the stakes are really high. And this may be, in fact, the last chance for American democracy, and I really feel that way. The last rubber stamp Congress gave Emperor George the power to imprison and torture anyone, anywhere, without a trial. And we may be one rubber stamp Congress away from seeing him declared president for life. And I'd really love to snap my fingers and end this political nightmare that we're living in, and I can't. However, I can use this show to help rally my American listeners. And if you're an American here in this program, and there's a lot who aren't, but it's a safe bet that you're well-informed and you're politically aware, and telling you about the importance of this election is just preaching to the choir. However, it is also a safe bet that you have friends and relatives and co-workers and classmates and neighbors who are absolutely clueless about politics. Lots of people don't understand the issues at all. And lots of people are so disinterested or turned off by politics that they've tuned out completely and don't plan to vote. Some people won't even know that there's an election taking place at all. These are the likely non-voters, many of whom that you can mobilize. These people can, with a little push, they can be motivated to vote. And here's some things you can do to get the vote out. Call up all your friends and relatives. Talk to your classmates or your coworkers. Talk to your neighbors. Send emails, instant messages. Let the people in your life know how concerned you are about the future of this country, and do it now. Give people time to think about what's going on. Ask people if they're planning to vote. If they're not, try and convince them to do so. Tell them that you don't care who they vote for as long as they get out and vote. And if opinion polls are to be believed, it's likely that they won't be voting Republican. So if you can afford it, take the day off of work, buy cups of coffee and donuts, do what you have to. Spend Election Day as a chauffeur. Take people to the polls. It's a great opportunity to catch up with people that you haven't talked to for a while, and it's a great way to get the vote out. The hardest thing about Election Day is actually getting people to the polling station. And if you can spare a day's wages and a tank of gas, you can really make a difference. The higher the turnout, the more likely it is that your government will improve. The nation and the world are counting on us. Do what you can, regardless of the outcome. At the end of the day, make sure that you can say you did something. Make sure that you can say you did all you can do. And we can't ask any more of that from anybody. And I hope you will take that seriously. I know I'm planning on Election Day to haul people. I'm planning on doing a little observing for a while as well. It's going to be a big day. It's going to be a huge day in American history, and I do hope that that everybody that will take it as seriously as it appears to be. Hey, I'm thankful to have you listening to the program today here on the Head On Radio Network. I do want to remind you that you're listening to The Guy James Show. We'll be back tomorrow, of course. But in the meantime, do remember that you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. Have a good day, gang, and I'll see you tomorrow.